one down.
And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei Ke'e Kilauea, and I really like that song. And who sang that song?
Xavier Rudd.
Well, that's what it sounded like, so I don't see where it's coming from.
New album.
Okay, Xavier Rudd. Boy, was that a good concert. That was the Manifest this last Sunday, and Xavier Rudd is really, really good and strong. So this is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox on KKCR Hanalei Ke'e Kilauea. And this program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Kauai Store.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
The Kekahu Foundation's Outreach and Development Committee will hold its regular meeting on Wednesday, June 29th at 6 p.m. at Cafe Coco's in Kapa'a. This meeting is open to the public and you are invited to attend. For more information, call Donovan at 808-634-0807.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio and for supporting us. We always, always, always really appreciate all the aloha that comes from our underwriters and the people who bring this to you on the air, and that is most likely you as a listener. So today we have a lot of topics and a lot of people, but they are mostly focused on politics. And in the first hour, I am really super happy to be having our delegate team from the Young Democrats that are going to Philadelphia to be representing Kauai and Hawaii. And they'll be, voting for us. They'll be the people who help to determine what goes on with the Democratic Convention and then making the votes in there for our presidential nominee from the Democratic Party. So I want to introduce them. Dylan Hooser.
Hi, Felicia. Thanks for having us on the show.
And Aria Costello.
Aloha.
And then Trisha Westinghouser.
Aloha, everybody.
And Marshall's in here helping me, too.
Hey, Felicia.
Oops, he's not potted up right. Okay, try again.
Felicia.
No, gotta go again.
Aloha.
Oh, there he is.
Hey there. Hey, is this going to be a great show?
It's going to be a great show.
I'm stoked.
And then I'm sticking Bart Dame in the wings. He is our Democratic committee man. He's over there on Oahu listening in. He's another person who goes over and really, really fights for what Hawaii needs and Hawaii wants. And hopefully it's not a fight. It's just a good discussion. In the second half of the show, we're going to have Norma Dr. Sparks, who is a candidate for county council. And so that'll be about 5 o'clock. And if people have questions for our people in here, 826-7771. So, Aria, tell us about yourself and then what is going on with the trip to Philadelphia.
Sure. Okay. Well, I'm a Kauai girl, born and raised here, went to Island School. I work right now at the Grand Hyatt Kauai as a marketing manager. But in my free time, I like to volunteer with the Democratic Party and other related politics. I have always been involved with politics and issues. My mom was a League of Women Voters from the very beginning. I was kind of raised with the Democratic Party as my moral
Who's your mom?
Sierra Castillo. And she used to also work for the Office of Elections for a long time. So she got me involved very young when she was doing WikiWiki voter registration drives. And that inspired me to start Vote Kauai, which is my organization that does voter registration around the island.
And are you sometimes at KCC for any reason? Or is maybe you've been there when they're doing a vote drive or something. I see you a lot at the registered.
Yes.
Okay. And Dylan Hooser, that name's kind of familiar. I've heard of you somewhere, somehow. Tell us about yourself.
I was also born and raised on Kauai, also a fellow island school attendee. Been involved in the political atmosphere on Kauai for a little bit now. My family's been involved for a little bit, too.
But, your dad is
Gary Hooser.
And you ran for District 15 last time.
For the House of Representatives seat.
Yep.
Yes. And it was a very big learning experience, and it was a good experience to get my feet wet in the political climate of Kauai.
Yes, and you have big news this year coming up soon. What's that?
Yeah, I'm having a baby.
Yay!
My wife is currently 6 months pregnant, and it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. She's actually listening in right now.
We love you, Leona. Okay, and then Tricia Wistinghauser. And then your Fernandez is your maiden name, yeah?
Yes.
So let's see.
Hello, everybody. My name is Patricia Wistinghausen. I was a Fernandez Rivera family. I'm from Wailua Kapa'a here in Kauai. And as far as being active in the Democratic Party, I am the State Central Committee Senate District 8 female representative for Kauai and Ni'ihau. And I'm definitely active with the Kauai Women's Caucus, Kauai Young Democrats, and I'm one of the national delegates going to Philadelphia from our community here. As far as community work, I'm the coordinator for the Kauai Violence Prevention Coalition. I'm on the Prevent Suicide Kauai Task Force and was recently trained to be a Safe Talk Prevent Suicide trainer for our community. And I'm on the board for the Kauai Rural Health Association and was one of the founding members for the statewide Emergency Management Professionals of Hawaii. And then for my actual work that I do, I work for the statewide nonprofit Hawaii Alliance for Progressive Action, HAPA, which focuses on social justice issues and engaging the community to participate in their government and be a part of the conversation. So thanks for having us, Felicia.
Yeah, and then not to generalize about a family, but you're from a musical family and a cultural practitioner family, correct?
Yes. So my grandpa is Larry Rivera, so Larry and Gloria Rivera, and so he's Mr. Coco Palms, and entertainer, singer, songwriter, composer. I told him earlier to listen in. I saw him before this, so.
And then you've got aunts who are Kumu, yeah?
Yeah, so Auntie Leilani, Leilani Rivera-Lo and Elima Rivera, they're both Kumuhula, and my mom, Lurleen Fernandez, does perform and entertain as well all around the island. So she's a singer, songwriter, composer, entertainer as well.
Yeah. And do you hula? Can you?
Grandpa will have me go and dance, and he says, it's been a while. I used to dance for him in Coco Palms and in his shows before. My cousins are definitely way, way better at it. He just tells me, don't worry, just go dance. They don't know the difference. But he says it into the microphone, of course. So he's a comedian as well. Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons I ask that is, you know, I know that the Democratic Party, at least from Hawaii, really makes an effort to have a gender balance and a background balance of who they send there. And I was wondering if you have practitioner background, a cultural practitioner background at all, to be representing somewhat of Hawaii.
I think by way of being here from the islands, I wouldn't say so heavy into necessarily like any one portion of the culture, but just understanding that sense of community and building community is a big part of what I do, like through the Kauai Violence Prevention Coalition or all these different groups or task forces that I'm a part of. It's the whole idea of you have to connect everybody. Everyone has their own events, their own activities happening. And if only we could do this together, it would lessen the burden, which is why, like with Kauai Young Democrats, Kauai Women's Caucus, all these other groups within the Democratic Party specifically, we are trying to collaborate and do things like that because we're supposed to be working in union or as a family.
Mm-hmm. I want to give a shout out to Janice Bond, too, because she's worked for decades with Kauai Young Democrats. Is there anybody else that you feel like needs acknowledgement?
I want to say that both these two women in here are being extremely humble, and they work very hard in our community. Every cause or every title that they've listed off, they've earned it, and they've carried forth to the best of their ability. I mean, Aria's been helped in countless campaigns and never says a word about it. She's never comes forward and asks for any credit or anything.
And she's a really good artist. Graphic artist, extremely great artist.
Patricia has been working extremely hard, you know, organizing the Bernie Sanders across the state, you know, weekend calls. She helped put together resolutions at the state convention that were very instrumental with the whole superdelegate stuff, that, you know, regarding that issue. Like I said, they're extremely humble, but they work really, really hard.
Yes, and actually having been at the Hawaii Democratic Convention, we were all there together. Actually, both Dylan and Patricia, you guys had a lot to do with, is this correct? You had a lot to do with putting that resolution on. You guys overturned some, you know, intention there from the state party and got the resolution on to say no superdelegates.
Yeah, no, it was definitely... I was just lucky enough and fortunate enough to be able to speak on the issue, but it was a lot. Like I said, Patricia and Darren Ash, and I want to also say, I guess every county submitted some form of superdelegate regulation.
Yes, yeah, so basically. It originated. We had seen a version from Bob Martin and Councilwoman Margaret Willey from Hawaii Island and Kauai. We ended up introducing along with Marion McHenry, who's in San Diego right now doing the Bernie. Ballot observation counting, and between the different counties, everybody introduced some version at their county convention, and ours did pass here on Kauai, but it didn't pass through the resolution committee for the state convention. However, we were able to file a minority report in time, which allows you to kind of revive or bring it back up on the floor for the state convention. So there was a lot of work and strategy behind how to do that correctly, who's going to speak, who's going to second, what are you going to actually say, and if you get any of course there's going to be a debate. We got past that initial portion to let the minority report be
Just getting the permission to have the discussion at the convention was challenging, to say the least. I mean, it was like a, I don't want to say soap opera, but a chess game of, you know, you got the other side who don't even want us to talk about it, let alone vote on the issue, who are trying to suppress the conversation. And then we have the other side that, you know, we believe in the democratic process and that we should have the conversation. You know, and put it to a vote.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that point up, because I do want to say at the Hawaii convention, I thought the side that was resisting change was really quite graceful with how much was pushed at it. You know, did you guys watch any of the film clips out of the New York convention?
Yes, I saw them.
So that was pretty intense. You see some young women they brought up Andrew Cuomo to be the new Democratic chair for New York. And they just opened it up for one moment and wanted to take a vote, and they wouldn't let any other names go up. And so what did you see?
I saw a lot of that happening. It was the establishment, quote-unquote, was blocking any discussion on a change or blocking any progression to have any other option. I think we've seen that over and over again with Hawaii Democratic Party, with other things that are happening, and it's been reflected on a national level with the DNC kind of early on siding with Hillary and not really giving the other candidates a chance to shine or at least have their voice heard or have a fair and balanced campaign.
And when I looked at that footage, there was... you know, it was somebody's cell phone, young women. Did you see that where, you know, two different women got backhanded with a cane in the face? Did you see that?
I saw a
headline about it.
Yeah,
it's
like...
so much news out there.
It's unreal. Old men just slapping them across the face.
And that's something that we need to recognize as we move forward, is to respect the differences of opinion. I mean, it's okay to disagree, but it's not okay to act out. Act out with violence or act out with name calling.
And just because that man, he looked like he was probably 80, but it certainly looked like he was able to pack a punch still yet, you know? Kind of, so That was a little bit rough. When you guys are going to Philadelphia, what's in your spirit? Are you going in yay? Are you going in nervous? Are you how do you feel?
Excited?
I would say all of the above of what you said. You're anxious, you're excited to go to see what the Democratic National Convention is going to be like, everything surrounding it leading up to, because there's always going to be, we were told you're going to be invited to different, maybe like a breakfast or a luncheon or to go to the Women's Caucus meeting on that national scale. So those are all things that really excite me. We know there are permits that were given for protests, for parades, for, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I am excited still that I am a pledged delegate for Bernie Sanders. And, you know, despite what the numbers are saying now, and, you know, it's more than likely from what things are showing currently that Hillary Clinton would get the nomination. At the same time, we can still, you know, we're going to be pledged voting for him. It's not done until the actual DNC happens or the vote is taken.
That's Democratic National Convention.
Yes, Democratic National Convention for the DNC. And so that's just what I'm looking forward to, is fighting to the end, fighting to ensure that his platform, his ideas, which has captured, inspired so many of us, are upheld or are considered or part of the conversation in the platform.
And the count is in, right?
Yes.
That the count is in.
Aria,
you are going as a young Democrat, but you don't have a voting position, correct?
Correct. I went to the Democratic National Convention in 2008 when Obama won the nomination.
And that was in Denver?
In Denver. And that was such an amazing experience for myself. I have been continually inspired by the people that I met and what I saw and what I heard, that I am, like, so excited to go again. And I'm not going as a voting member delegate, but I'm excited to go to the caucus meetings, excited to see the protesting, and just excited to be in that kind of environment.
How old were you when you went to that?
I was 21.
21. So were you a voting person?
No, I wasn't. Me and three of my college friends just got in the car and drove out from California to go. We volunteered for Rock the Vote, and we did some calling for Organizing for America, some phone banking.
And they let you in the Coliseum, the convention hall?
To the open part. I didn't go on the floor, but there's watch parties around where you can go and watch what's happening. So for every delegate that's there, and there's probably about three more other people that are in the sidelines.
And do you have a volunteer position? Do you get to go in this time, or are you going to be in the surrounding area?
No, I'm just going to be in the surrounding areas, reporting from the sidelines.
Great. And then how many of our delegates are young? There's quite a good number, yeah? They're all nodding their heads. This is radio.
Quite a handful. Yeah, quite a handful.
I don't know the exact number.
Is it
like about half?
I know for the delegates for Bernie Sanders, we have two of our Kauai Young Democrats, and we have another Young Democrat from Maui, the president.
Jason?
No, Tim Lara.
Tim Lara, okay.
So Jason Eno did get elected, though, to be one of the national delegates. But, yeah, Tim Lara.
And Therese Amato is going, too. She's maybe just a little bit over the Young Democrats' age, which is 35 or under, right?
Yes, it's 35 or under. But I think most people in the Democratic Party are Young Democrats at heart, so we like to include everybody.
Yeah. So there's a good crew going. And then how much is it? Did you know? Did you guys look? Did you buy your tickets yet?
They're estimating it to cost about $4,000 per delegate.
And you have to pay your own way, right?
Yes. And that's including hosted breakfasts from the party. That's including airfare. And that's including the rooms that that the delegates have to stay at. Because of security reasons, the whole delegation stays together. So they're going to have to be bussed in.
So every morning we wake up and we have a breakfast together and get issued our credentials so we can get into the actual convention.
So you're each having to pay your own way total.
Yes.
Yes.
So they did say like 4 to 5, it depends. So I personally have not bought my ticket yet. I need to raise more funds until I can buy it. But of course, I should have bought it weeks ago. So it is a challenge because you have that honor of being able to, granted this way to go, but you do still have to financially fund it. So that's something we're still working on.
You know, I wonder, have you guys asked people for miles? Sometimes people have hundreds of thousands of dollars of miles. I mean, hundreds of thousands of miles because you can do all your business charging on your credit card. Some people have free, you know, have you asked anybody for that? They might put a little, I know that there are GoFundMe accounts trying to help everybody get there. The Young Democrats, there's no funding for you guys directly?
Not through the direct party, no, because it's not a Young Democrat sanctioned event. Each of the delegates are working to raise their own funds to buy their plane tickets, but also the Young Democrats, we are fundraising to supplement them.
Yeah, we just had a garage sale this last weekend.
Was that successful?
Yeah, definitely.
I would say.
Okay, good.
We've also been writing letters to our elected officials. I want to thank Senator Ron Cochi. He was the first elected official that contributed to our cause, which is really, really respect that and really appreciate that.
Any amount is appreciated.
Yeah, so we have been writing letters to our friends and family and other Democrats that we have worked with in the past asking for a monetary donation or airline miles.
So everybody's got, like, a separate GoFundMe account. Is that right?
I need to go home and make one.
I have one that's up. And then
you know what? This is what I'll suggest, that if you guys want to. I don't want to do, like, a big shameless plug for fundraising, but this is, you know, if you just put your GoFundMe things on both my Facebook page, Felicia Alonji Cowden, and then perhaps KKCR, the Kauai Community Radio Facebook page, people can see it if they're into it. Then, but I just want to help you guys make sure to be able to get there, and I do want to recommend that you guys, you know, sometimes there's great service organizations, and they might have miles for you, and that's a whole lot easier than coughing up the cash. People might have the miles, and because I know that it's very important that we have the balance of young and underfunded rather than those top little percentages of people who have that.
Right. Thank you, Felicia.
Yeah,
we really appreciate
you.
It. We also have our donate button on facebook.com/Kauai Young Democrats. We can donate to our ActBlue account.
Okay, so Young Democrats is another Facebook
for my
page.
GoFundMe, it's gofundme.com/sendTricia2DNC, so TRICIA, the number 2DNC. But we'll definitely post it on your page and the website.
Yeah, and if people want to call in to 826-7771, you know, you can ask questions. Marshall, do you have any thoughts?
Just operator standing by.
Okay. Right? Have any of you ever been to Philadelphia before?
No.
Yes.
I've been once. We got to see the Liberty Bell and just kind of, I mean, trekking through the city, and just it was so massive, and the Federal Reserve, I believe. And it'll be wonderful to spend more time there. It'll definitely be scheduled time, but then there are supposed to be other activities so we can get out into the city and interact, same thing with other like-minded supporters of whatever groups or interests we have, like Women's Caucus and Young Democrats.
And for what that's worth, the three women here in the room, we're all in the Women's Caucus.
Yes.
And we love men, too. It's not like it's only about, but it's the Women's Caucus is trying to make sure that what's good, you know, the women's issues aren't overlooked. And those tend to be things that actually matter for men as well. Very, very often it is single mothers, young mothers, a lot of challenges like that. So Marion McHenry, who is the district chair for District 14, which is Wailua to Haena. She went over to San Diego. Do any of you want to tell me about why she's there? Do you know? Because I do know, but I'm hoping she calls in, actually. Marion, if you're
listening, call in. To help with the ballot count.
To help with the ballot count. Do you know how many are still uncounted? It seems like over a million are still uncounted.
I heard the number was in the millions as well.
In the millions?
So that includes the provisional ballots that were counted. I think it was a large proportionate amount that were cast this last election, as opposed to in 2008. There was a record number cast then, but it was like even more this time. And also they were taking, I think, absentee ballots 3 days after the election day. So as long as it was postmarked by election day, they still accepted it 3 days prior. So that's a lot of uncounted ballots that they had to sort through.
I talked to somebody who was in the vote count in Santa Cruz County, and they said it was just rooms full of boxes, just rooms of it. And then that person, the box that they counted through was like 90% Bernie Sanders.
So let's say they finish counting and Bernie Sanders actually won California. What? How do you see that affecting the primary race altogether? Is that going to change anything?
I think that people will be very upset at the media for advertising a win prematurely. As far as the numbers go, I don't think that it's going to affect the number of delegates in any sort of way that will change the nomination process.
Why is that?
Because right now it's about, I believe, 51% to 48%, and if Bernie wins, the counties that he is flipping over,
right, so
it's
maybe
not a huge switch. It is a win, and it is a swap, but it's not going to be to the number where he's going to be picking up a significant amount more of pledged delegates.
So she has more, but the main thing that really puts her a lot more is all of these superdelegates.
Yes.
And, you know, from watching the media, they've already just called it. Is this actually, because I'm pretty attached, it's hard for me to watch that. I get pretty discouraged over it because it doesn't seem like a fair give. But neither one of them, is that correct? Neither one of them has the number to truly be hands down the choice.
With or without superdelegates?
Either.
Well, you need the superdelegates in order to make the vote.
But did anybody get the 2,300?
Yes, so what happened? The reason why they called it for Hillary is because the New York Times, the AP, Associated Press, did phone calls and called all of the superdelegates, and they have anonymously pledged their support for Hillary or for Bernie, so they got the final count that they think is going to happen, and that's why they were confident enough to call it.
Well, that's like gossip.
I don't think journalistically that was a very smart move. I think it was just completely ridiculous that they did it the night before the last election that was happening.
The last primary date.
So what about the superdelegate issue? Are you hearing anything from within the DNC establishment in terms of whether there is any possibility of getting rid of superdelegates for 2020?
I'll say that in the conversations, I didn't hear anything specifically about that. Mainly, the focus is on the platform of saying like the fight for 15, you know,
which got
wage,
nixed already.
Which, yeah.
And the Trans-Pacific Partnership got approved already.
I don't believe that it got nixed. I don't think it was as strong as they wanted it to be, but I think the language is still getting in there when it wasn't there before.
What are they saying, an eventual 15 an hour, like Hillary has been saying, not 15 for everybody right away, because there's variations in cost of living in different places in the country and whatever, but we'll start everybody at like 12, or some people at 12, some people at 15, and get to 15. Is that basically what they're saying? We'd like to see 15.
They're working on it, is what they are trying to say.
Yeah.
Going back to the superdelegate thing, I just want to say that a lot of people that I know that I trust their opinions greatly as Democrats, their argument for keeping the superdelegate process, which I don't agree with, the reason why they're going to keep it or they want to keep it is because we look to our friends on the right in the Republican Party, and if they had a system of superdelegates, 100% confident that Trump would not be their presumptive nominee.
Right. Which is interesting, though, because he really did get the people's vote.
Yes.
So people may or may not like him, but they're saying, hey, we could have circumvented the will of the people, and they didn't succeed with it. I did look it up, and so with the superdelegates that are said to be in there, Clinton is said to have 2,800, so that she is safely in that range. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Kauai Soapbox. I have three of our Young Democrat contingent going to Philadelphia in here. Two are delegates, pledged delegates. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air. Aloha, you're on the air.
Caller, are you there? The phone shows that she's still there. I think I'll hear a dog barking.
Yeah, I hear a dog barking. Okay, well, then you're going to just have to... I'm going to leave the thing up, and when she decides to speak in...
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I was trying to listen to both at the same time.
Yeah, turn your radio off. Okay.
I'm on the headphones on the laptop.
Okay. You're on. Great. So what's up? You're on the line. What's on your mind?
I was calling to tell you about a couple of addresses for delegates. There's a Facebook page. It's called Mileage Points Exchange for Bernie Delegates. And that's where you can get miles from people that want to donate. And you hook up with them individually on that page. And there's also the Hawaii Bernie Delegate Fund that has most everyone's GoFundMe pages on there.
Okay, so let me make sure I got this.
And I just wanted to remind everyone that Hawaii delegates have to go further and pay more than just about anybody in the whole country. So come on, you guys. We really need your help.
Thank you. Thank you. So that's Mileage Points Exchange.
Right, Bernie Delegates.
And then, so they would go mileagepointsexchange.org. Can you put that on
No, it's a Facebook page.
Oh, Facebook page. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Mileage Points Exchange, Bernie Delegates.
And there is a BernieDelegates.com page also that's not, well, they have a Facebook page also.
And so I would imagine people that are, because there are going to be Clinton delegates going as well, too. So if the Clinton delegates are looking for that funding, that they could probably Google search.
They'll have to find their own Facebook page.
Okay. Marshall, can you look that up? Because we really want to be balanced to everybody. But
right. I don't.
All right. That's good for you. For here, KKCR, I need to be doing both. But I really appreciate that call in. Do you have any other thoughts that you wanted to share?
Well, I just hope people will start chipping in a few bucks here and there, because it would be a crying shame not to have our young Hawaii Democratic delegates go to the convention. It would break my heart and theirs too. So come on, you guys. $5, $10, you can do it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Can I just get that
thank
straight?
You.
On Facebook, we have a page called Mileage Point. Exchange
for Bernie delegates.
For Bernie delegates.
For Bernie delegates. Okay, thank you.
And also, the Hawaii Bernie Delegate Fund are most of the individual GoFundMe pages for Bernie delegates. I'm sure there's Clinton delegate pages on there, but you'll have to find those on your own.
Okay, and probably also there is Republican delegate pages in there. We haven't really discussed
right.
that one, but okay, so thank you so much.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha.
Good luck, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, aloha, thank you. So I'm just calling in to plant a seed in our hearts and minds that we all share. It's kind of a continuation from the Hawaiian Issue Show that I heard on Saturday. I caught the end, and there was this auntie who called in talking about peace and so beautiful and holding it in our hearts. And then she'd say, but we know it's not possible. And I'm just calling in to say, we know it's possible. Let's hold it in our hearts and know it. And part of us feeling peace on earth and knowing that all people will be free and all nations will be free, and that we'll grow all organic food and all the water will be pure and the air will be pure. And to allow ourselves to feel that and to know that, and especially those of us who are so blessed to live here on Kauai, on this beautiful island, and when we feel that, even with all the turmoil and craziness happening on the earth, when we can step into that breath and just feel that peace and that joy of this new world that we're co-creating together, then that feeling ripples out to the whole world, because we're here on Kauai. So thank you all, everyone here on this island and listening. I just felt really called to inspire to call in and say that, and just totally all the way with Bernie. I think he's a miracle. I'm really delighted that he's doing this, and also I offer each one of us who care about him and see the vision to send him prayers and light as well and protection, because we do know what some of these people do with, you know, people like Lennon and things like this. So, yeah, just praying for light and love, and thank you for the great show.
Thank you so much.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.
No, we should. I mean, Bernie's done a lot. I mean, he's made a huge awakening across you know, America, bringing people to the table, getting people aware and to participate, you know, and we just got to get people to continue to participate after this.
Yes, and I also want people who support Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump to feel very welcome to call into this show.
One of the things I was going to share, mahalo to the person or the two people that called, was that for the March 26th caucus day or presidential preference poll day, the beauty of that day, as crazy as it was, disorganized, and people had to fill out new Democratic Party forms, new voter registration forms, and all sorts of different issues. The really wonderful part that came out of that was that because we were so busy being party members, helping, volunteering, somebody made the comment to my husband and I about, you know, we don't know which candidate you were for, but thank you, you know, for what you were, for what you're doing, and just mahalo for that. So that was just neat because it wasn't about, yeah, being for Bernie or being for Hillary. It was about just trying to be together as Democrats, participate in the process, exercise our right as citizens of this country to vote, to have our voices be heard. And that's where we're really excited, I think, overall to be a part of continuing beyond this election cycle, to continue to, like, say, be on the county committee, be part of our precinct clubs, our district councils, and collaborate on things, because we need to have an ongoing conversation about the everyday issues that are still going to be happening beyond this.
Well, I would say
beyond the election year.
One thing that came out to me from this election, not that I didn't know it, but what became painfully clear to me is how flawed is the party system. And that, you know, what I learned, and Marshall had done a lookup on it, was the 12th Amendment, which happened in, like, the late 1800s, I think it was after the Civil War. It sort of locks us into a two-party system, because the person has to get a true majority, meaning 51% of the vote. If you had three candidates and there was a 41%, a 38%, and I'm just making up, don't do the math, 20-something percent, that person who got 41% isn't then elected. So we've been kind of hijacked into having a two-party system. I think that many of you're talking about discouraged Republicans. What I've seen is a lot of them are actually pretty happy with Hillary Clinton, because the Democratic Party has moved so far right that, you know, it's kind of sort of middle between the two extremes, and there's almost not a progressive community.
That was 1804.
So that wasn't very long. 1804, for real? So they did the 12th Amendment?
For real.
Okay, you know what that means? Is that it had only been like 15 years that they'd had the Constitution going on.
I've been thinking a lot about the two-party system at a national level, and I think that what's really important for people that want to break that two-party system is to get candidates and get other parties involved at the local level and the state level, and that will affect the change that we can have a conversation about opening up to another party at a national level. You know, Hawaii is one of the most Democratic states in the union, and we're definitely one of the most green states in the union. The fact that we can't elect a Green Party candidate is kind of surprising. We had one, Keiko Bonk. She was our state representative from the Big Island, and she's awesome. I would love to see more Green Party candidates stepping up and participating in the process. I know that it is really discouraging, because essentially running not as a Democrat, besides some places in rural Oahu, maybe, I mean, you can't get elected. But if people kind of stood their ground and hold on for a couple of years, maybe we could get Green Party candidates nominated at state level. And if other states do that too, maybe we can get some people elected to Congress in the Green Party. And maybe then we can kind of start breaking that down, the two-party system.
Well, we would have to upend the 12th Amendment. We could change what two parties there are. I know in Hawaii there's been an effort this past year to have an Aloha Aina party, and that wouldn't be something, obviously, that would translate to the national level, but the Aloha Aina is almost like a Green Party, but it is one that
is actually respecting the Kanaka Mo'oli experience here as well as caring for the land.
I do got to say, even though we're still stuck in a quote-unquote two-party system, that, you know, Bernie has got a whole lot of new people to step up and run. They might not be running for the Green Party ticket, but we do have a whole lot of new young progressive and older progressive people running, I mean, across the state, on our island, and those people need our support. I mean, and a lot of people came out to support Bernie, and they're asking, what next? What do we do now? Now it's time to look inward, look at home, and what can we do here, you know? And to me, right now, here is to find a candidate you believe in and support them, help them out, whether it's with, you know, a friendly word or a donated hour or two of sign waving or knocking on doors or a $20 donation. I mean, it all adds up, and it really helps.
Yeah, it's getting involved in the process in whatever way you can. And, you know, you're right about Bernie inspiring people to get involved. In fact, his non-concession speech immediately after that, he put out that call. I think it was the same night or the next day. There had been 7,000 people went to his site and took advantage of the services that he's offering there to help people get involved and guide them in the process of running for office.
You know, I know locally we got Fern Rosensteel. She's running up our District 14's House Representative seat. You know, we have Mason Chalk, Joanne Yukimura,
Gary Hooser.
You know, of course, my dad. But yeah, they all need help, and you know, in my mind, they all represent the progressive voice of Kauai.
And so, progressive. How are you going to define what progressive is? I know how I would define it. People will say progress to where? What is progressive?
They put people over profits. Yeah. You know, the health of an environment and people over the profit of a company or corporation.
I think it's constantly being better than the status quo. People are saying, like, well, it's worked, it's okay, but I think we can be better. We're constantly getting better. We can do more. We can help more. We believe that we're all here for the greater good, and we can help each other get to that point.
I think something that has happened just this past week that is, you know, somewhat of a big deal, it's supposed to be a really big deal, is the British exit from the European Union. They've really only been together for about 30 years, but it's kind of doing almost like a United States of Europe, not quite so heavily that, though. The Council for the European Union is not elected, it's appointed.
Appointed by whom?
You know, I'm not even sure. I should make you look that up right on the
spot.
But
it's representative, and they're not directly elected.
They're not directly elected. Have you all been following that?
Yes, I have. I have a really good friend who lives in England, and she was posting about that this was happening. You know, sometimes we get so caught up in local and state politics. I didn't even realize it was happening until a few days before, and I saw the hashtag Brexit. And I am just completely shocked that people voted for this. And I've been reading commentary online, and I've noticed that two things, that a lot of people are on both sides of the issue said, oh, well, I didn't really think it was going to happen, so my vote didn't matter. I either didn't cast a vote, or I voted, but I didn't think it was actually going to happen in the favor that they believed it in. So from both sides, it's kind of like, what do you mean you didn't think it was going to happen, or you didn't think your vote was going to count? That's what you do when you vote. Your vote is counted. And also the fact that overwhelmingly, I think 70% of the youth voted to stay within the union.
Really?
And like 70% of the elders voted to get out of it. And I thought that that was like a shockingly crazy number.
I'm actually unsurprised at the difference on that. Because I did live in England for a time. I was 21 when I lived there. I worked at Intel over there. And the England of that time is so different, profoundly different than the England of the present. It's like there's almost no English people left in England. You know, it is so much everybody but the English, it seems like, you know, especially like in London or Sheffield and a lot of these places. And so
isn't that what people are saying about America as well?
It doesn't even come close. I'm not complaining, I'm just saying. And in that case, I went there to help my sister move over with her 5-year-old and start her in kindergarten. And you know, they had hijabs in kindergarten, and the teacher was Saudi, and you know, she was learning Arabic her first week in school, and there was an English teacher too, but the it was, you know, what was really very, very evident is all these couple decades of war that we've done, or 15 years of war over there in the north of Africa and the Mideast, that those people have been displaced powerfully, and they've been displaced with nothing. It's a tragedy of what we have visited upon that region. And so, to the credit of the English, you know, they have welcomed them in. But it is, you know, the mosque was the biggest element on the skyline in Sheffield. And Sheffield, what was bombed heavily in World War II. It was interesting, like their fences and their railings, they had taken the bayonets off the guns, and they had bent them and turned them into the city sidewalk streets of things, you know, like where they had the railings. They had taken all these different implements of war and bent them into something much nicer, and they had a real commitment to having aloha. But I think, you know, when I was there, I thought, oh, this is probably how the Kanaka Maoli feel. This is probably how the Hawaiians feel, because it's, what it seemed like is the culture in those bigger cities that I was in was eclipsed, you know, and it was without complaint, you know, the full burqas, so you can't see people's faces, and that was dominant. And so I could see where older people would be like, going, wow, you know.
It's definitely a hard balance, you know. I mean, we're obviously facing that in America too, is
not nothing to that degree.
We want to have an open door policy, but we don't want to lose our culture in the same sense. And how do you find that balance, you know, without shutting your doors on people who need help?
I have an answer for that. Stop blowing them up.
That's,
you know,
it's a good solution.
I think if we stop hurting the people in Central and South America, less will be coming up this way. If we stop having aggressive
And policies, I think Bernie and Tulsi have come out really strong against anti-war. You know, Tulsi's message has been really, I don't want to send my brothers and sisters off to, you know, off
right.
to war. I don't want to send them off to die. And
it's
that's
her
important.
Main theme, really.
You know,
yeah.
It's really important.
That's really important, because when you go and you devastate another place to where they cannot even begin to stay living there, and they come with nothing, and they're hungry, it's, you're bringing in a crowd that is having a hard time, you know, coming in and being helpful, right? They need to be helped. And that said, I still saw, you know, like the place that I stayed, Iraqis ran that hotel, and, you know, it was really painful to sit there and see how many displaced people were there from our own war policies. And Britain usually is our ally in going in and attacking these countries. But I think when I was there, what I thought, okay, if this was what was coming to us, we would stop blowing these people up. Because
you see a direct correlation our actions and the result of the action.
It is overwhelming. And to not hear even English very much when you're in a public place, it's different languages. So, like I said, when I was there, I thought about, you know, Hawaiian people. That happened to them, right? It totally eclipsed what was here for them. So for us, we think, okay, that's our culture. But really, even on the North American continent, the United States, after the obliteration largely of the Native Americans, it's a whole community of immigrants. So it's a lot easier to be five different things. And
I guess it's my belief, if Trump gets elected, that, you know, he will damage our forward relations to a point where we could be in a predicament where we will be having to accept immigrants from some harsh actions that we might take. And I mean, I just hear a lot of his speeches. I feel like Mexico's up in arms. I hear a lot of, you know, putting up a wall, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear the response from other countries, at least, you know, I've seen stuff on Facebook and whatnot, and doesn't seem very positive.
It's interesting to see statistics, because I'll read something and they can always manipulate it whatever way they want. But I believe there is more people leaving the United States for Mexico than people from Mexico coming into the United States more recently. Though most of the people leaving the United States for Mexico are what we would call Americans, because they can afford to live down there. You know, it's seniors going down there to retire, or people who can tread water in the economy are going in that direction.
You're right, though. There's a net emigration among Mexicans. More are leaving.
More are leaving the United States.
Mm-hmm. Than coming in.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So the whole idea of, like, stopping the big flow of Mexicans coming to the United States, well, it's already, like, in the negative.
It's in the negative. And if they put a big wall, does that mean they're not going to let the Americans go flow down there? You know, I mean, obviously they can get on a plane, but, I mean, it would be an interesting dynamic if they said, okay, they're going to put a wall and we're not going to let, you know, them come this way. You go, great. Well, then you guys can't go that way.
Yeah. We also shouldn't generalize the immigration population is just Mexicans.
Well, that's why I said Central America.
Yeah, Central America, we have, and, you know, they're concerned about the Asian countries. They're concerned about Middle Eastern countries as well, and their speech is just complete hatred towards these people as a race with no basis at all.
Well, most of the ones that there's being vocalized as negative are places that we are bombing. Or going in and disrupting and forcing a regime change, like what happened in Honduras recently. You know, when we go in and we disrupt where people are there, it's kind of a fallacy to think that they come to the United States because this is where they've always wanted to go. They want to be where they are if they could have a righteous life where they are. They don't want to leave. They're driven out. So...
I just wanted to, I guess, before I see it's getting close to the top of the hour, and I just wanted to bring up really quickly that... The Women's Caucus and the Kauai Young Democrats are working on putting together a Kauai candidate forum on a Thursday, August 4th. I don't know, Patricia, you have more details you could share?
Sure, it'll be, so as Dylan said, Kauai Candidates Forum, Thursday, August 4th at Chiefest Kamakahele Middle School Cafeteria. It'll begin at 5 p.m. and it will actually run till 9 p.m. at night. And the reason for that is because we are going to be including candidates for prosecuting attorney, House of Representatives, or Senate District 8 seat. There are two candidates, and our 13 candidates for council. So we're going to be breaking up into different groups or segments. That way, depending on what you're particularly interested in, you can kind of show up for that portion and really engage or listen in on the responses, and to hear where these candidates stand on those, on the different issues that matter to you.
Yeah, it's important to get educated on what's happening in our community, you know. I mean, and this is a good opportunity, if you don't know what's going on, to come and listen, and listen to the questions that are being asked and the answers that are being given. You know, I think, like I said, it's really important. It's the focus is now here on a local level. You know,
And I want to put the Kahea out to different organizations, put the request out. If people are wanting to do a candidate forum, KKCR is really always happy to come in and stream that live. It's very important for people to hear it. And I'm very thankful that they're going to do this on August 4th. But to me, it seems a bit late.
No, I agree. I mean, but this is just as fast as we could get put together.
Yeah.
I think more of these need to happen. More of these forums, more of these debates.
We need to have a little bit more coming on. So for people that don't know who they are going to vote for, you, if you get your absentee ballot in, you might wait a little bit to, you know, if you haven't heard what everybody has to offer, because there are a number of good people running. And here's something that I think is good: is that I basically. Honestly, like everybody. So it is easier for me, like when, you know, if my candidate doesn't win, it's not like I don't like the other candidates. You know, it's not like they're bad people.
I guess you kind of bring up a somewhat of a point of being educated on how you vote. You know, with a council race, you're allowed 7 votes. I mean, just because you're given $7 doesn't mean you got to spend all your money. Just because you're given 7 votes doesn't mean you got to vote for 7 people. Sometimes in your zeal of voting and checking that box, you're actually canceling out your vote.
Well, on that point, what's going to be nice for the people running for county council is that there's 13 and 14 get to make it through to the general. Same for the prosecutor. I think where we're going to have people eliminate, that will be on the House of Representatives seats.
People that are on the same party ticket, yeah.
I wanted to point out, too, that there's another candidate running for the state senate seat, Kanoe Ohuna, which is another very qualified candidate. But she's, you know, a new to the game, and she's running against, you know, a very established candidate. Who is going to be a tough challenge.
So I believe Kanoe will be coming in. Justin Collar is going to come in on the 12th. We had in here Lisa Aaron for a prosecutor. There's we try and bring everybody in. We're really happy that Norma Dr. Sparks is going to be coming in, and she'll be on the air very soon. So, yay! We appreciate that you're coming in, and I mean that you guys are going to Philadelphia for us, and I appreciate that you've come in here.
No, thank you. Thank you for having us on the show.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, and so you know, if people can get a hold of you. You know, I think that there's going to be other people besides Aria that are going that maybe aren't directly a delegate, but they can still go, and everybody goes and have the big party over there, and everybody supports each other. So
yeah, if you are coming, you're planning on going, and you're from Kauai or Hawaii in general, and if you have any affiliation with the Democratic Party, it might not be bad to reach out to somebody, and we can try and get you included in some of the activities or the stuff that's
right.
going on.
And if anyone out there is listening and wants to join the Kauai Young Democrats, we're always looking for more members to help us with candidate forums, help us with voter registration, and any other ideas that we might want to come up with. So you can find us on Facebook.com/Kauai Young Democrats.
Okay.
And same goes for Kauai Women's Caucus. It's for men, women, for everybody to participate. So same thing in collaboration. We're trying to gain new membership, revive those two different groups. And we do hope that this candidate forum coming up will definitely be a success, and that going into the general election, we can hopefully collaborate again to host another one.
Yeah.
So thank you, Felicia and Marshall.
I'd like to see about 3 or 4 at least, so people have a real chance to do that. So aloha. So have a good
day. Thank you, Felicia.
All right.
Thank you guys for coming in.
Thank you, Marshall.
Yeah. Thank you.
And so Norma Dr. Sparks is going to be on next, and I have to say, I thought she did the best job of everybody. We've loved everybody, but she did a wonderful job hosting one of those forums. She was the person who helped with that. So,
last year?
2 years ago.
2 years
she
ago.
Was
right.
in doing
right, right.
that.
Yeah, that was a great job. Thank
yeah,
you.
So she's going to get set up. She's in the house now, and we'll be hearing from her. But you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox and the station that loves you. So council candidate Norma Dr. Sparks will be on right after we come back. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man.
KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea K224CQ Anahola K284AL Haleiwa.
Attention recyclers, beginning June 1st, Kauai residents and businesses can recycle their electronic waste free of charge 6 days a week. E-waste will be accepted at the Puhi Metals Recycling Center Monday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Puhi Metals is located at 3951 Puhi Road, about a mile from the intersection of Kaumualii Highway. Acceptable e-waste includes computers and accessories, televisions, printers, office equipment, audio and video equipment, and handheld devices. All brands of e-waste will be accepted free of charge with no quantity limits. Services are provided by Resource Recovery Solutions, and e-waste is shipped for recycling to IMS Electronics Recycling in Washington. For more information, call the County Recycling Office at 241-4841, 241-4841, or visit our website at kauai.gov/e-waste. kauai.gov/e-waste. Help keep our garden aisle green. Recycle your e-waste.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. All right, so I have two new people in the studio. Norma, let's make sure you're mic'd up okay.
I think so.
Very good. And I'm dragging her husband to the mic. Steve, I want to make sure you're on there.
Hello.
Hello. Okay. He also has so much to add and offer, so we won't pull him in too hard, but I do want to have him on the standby. So, Norma, you know, why don't you start by telling us about yourself and what you want to share, and then I have a bunch of questions.
Okay. I was born and raised on Kauai in Kaloa. My father moved from the Philippines to work for McBride Sugar Plantation in 1946. My mother then followed him with four of their children at that time. I'm the only one in my family who was born in the United States. My mother was a real example to us to be involved in community and to try to improve conditions within the community. As a result, all four of us sisters all became social workers. So I started out as a social worker in Department of Health for the state of Hawaii as well as family court. And when I was at family court, I thought that perhaps I should become a family court judge. And so I went back to law school. And after law school, I decided that I didn't really want to become a judge, but I wanted to have more direct contact with people. I then clerked with the chief judge, James Burns, of the Intermediate Court of Appeals, and I was the chief legal aide for him.
So where was this at?
This is all in Honolulu.
Okay.
And then after that, I became a deputy attorney general for the state of Hawaii. And
really?
Yes.
I didn't know that. That's good.
And my clients were really great. My client was the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs. So there was a variety of work for me to do with licenses, with insurance, with bankruptcy. So I really had a really good grounding in administrative law.
I guess. Hey, high five. That's good. That's good. That's no small accomplishment, actually.
You know, and I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed looking at cases. I enjoyed drafting law. And I think that most of what I did, you know, had a good ending to them. They were actually passed at the legislature. At the same time, I also worked very closely with the state of Hawaii legislature. And the next Attorney General Warren Price then asked me to become director for the Child Support Enforcement Agency in Hawaii. And that was a really tough job. The agency had failed about four different federal audits, and I walked in at a time when staff morale was very low, productivity was very low, complaints were coming from everywhere, and it really was under the spotlight. But I'm pleased to say that after I left, the workers and the staff had the tools they needed. I was able to find $26 million to bring in a new computer system at the Child Support Enforcement Agency. So I was also very involved in designing computer systems. After that, I was asked to be with the DHS, Department of Human Services.
You saw me react because I have a computer background, actually. So when you're saying designing computer systems, when I'm thinking in the government, what you're designing is like the database or how it is tracking the issues more than designing the computers. You're designing the process for managing the information flow.
Correct.
Okay.
I was a subject matter person.
Okay.
So we had federal dollars that I was able to convince the legislature to put those dollars in trust only for child support enforcement activities, which really raised that. So after I left there, I became administrator of the state child welfare services in Hawaii, and in both child support enforcement and with the Department of Human Services, I had offices here on Kauai. And so even way back to 1991, 1990, I really was able to understand what was going on in Hawaii, Hawaii in particular. And one of the things that I had to do was during Iniki, for example, you know, I really had to get generators out to the staff or checks would not be going out to the custodial parent. And that was a very difficult time. As you know, on Kauai, it was very difficult. And it's the very first time that I actually came home a week later. And in fact, I was getting ready to work with the governor, to get us over. And so when I came back, I began to really understand how difficult things were going to be on Kauai. And with those kinds of conditions, family issues do become more complicated and they're more stressed. So as administrator for statewide child welfare services, I also worked with the staff there to give them the support that they needed to do a better job. Child abuse is a difficult work. Foster care is also very difficult. And trying to maintain a balance between keeping a child with a family or removing the child is a very delicate issue. Following that, I was asked to be a consultant with AMS, which is AMS, which is...
What does that stand for?
American Management Services.
Okay.
And it is, or it was, an international company. It did a lot of defense work, but it also installed a lot of computer systems, you know, for jurisdictions, particularly, for example, in California, the tax system. In Hawaii, they also did the tax system here. And my job was to, again, look at what was happening, the processes, and how would we change those processes because of what the system can now do. For example, we were able to remove most of the tasks that staff had to do by having the computer system do it, for example, sending out letters, et cetera. And I think we became very... productive because of those changes in the Department of Human Services. So when I became a consultant, I traveled from Honolulu to the mainland every week, flew out on Monday, came home on Fridays.
So you were flying to California. What's the mainland to you, California?
California, Virginia, Wisconsin, Ohio.
Wow.
Those are the areas.
So it sounds like you've had experience, robust experience, with how the state government runs, with Health and Human Services, that's a big issue for us over here. And then it sounds like in consulting, it helps you to have the opportunity to have some comparison and contrast to how different communities might manage their own processes in different areas. Did you find that there was much of a difference?
One of the things that happens with both foster care as well as with child support enforcement agencies, there are certain processes that you have to do, in order to service and receive federal dollars. Separated from that, I did find that there were differences depending on whether it was a state system or a county system or a city system. And that just reflected the differences, between those types of jurisdictions. But I also was very careful about recognizing all of the cultural issues that might come up. For example, it was surprising that in Wisconsin, they were very concerned about the American Indian children that were being removed. And
yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
how that process occurred was that we then had to go to the Indian Nation and work with them about how they would want their child to be served or, protected.
Yeah, that was a very big issue then, because the Native Americans were often taken from the families really almost overly much and then placed outside the culture. So that was an issue, I remember. So this was all when you still lived in Honolulu.
Yes, for 4 years.
For 4 years. And then at some point you went to L.A., is that right, Los Angeles?
Yes, yes. So then because of the need in California, in Sacramento, for the state of California to change the way they did child welfare work. And so as a consultant, I worked with California, the state of California, to figure out how best to give these children the best service that we could give. And so with the state of California, I created or I suggested 4 different paths. One was just working within the community, keeping the child at home. And secondly is that if we could not return the child to the parent, then we would place the child with a relative. So even though children were placed outside of their immediate family, they still had connections with the rest of the family. And I brought that, by the way, to California because of my work here.
Yeah, I just finished my HANAI training. I got my certification for foster parenting, and that is a similar goal. That's mm-hmm. what they try and do here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And actually here, before I left as a consultant, I actually started the Ohana Ho'oponopono work here, and it became a national model. There are 5 jurisdictions that were selected by the American Judges Association, and we happen to be one in Hawaii. And because of the culture that we have, where many of the cultures here often communicate indirectly.
Yes. And some are very direct.
And some are very direct, correct.
Yes.
But we were concerned about the ones that somehow had challenges in letting us know how best to serve them. And so I carried that experience with me to California. And that was the second phase. The third, of course, was that we had to go to court. And everything was done according to the court. The judges determined what had to be done. And the fourth, which I think was something everyone talked about, but no one really tried to implement, and that is to have aftercare for the children.
What does aftercare mean?
Aftercare actually means the same thing, the same services that were provided on an outpatient basis.
Oh.
Services provided by community agencies, not the government, but the agencies. So it's actually the same preventive services, but it's at the point of when we close our case with the families.
And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox, and this is Felicia. Our guest is Norma Dr. Sparks. She is a candidate for Kauai County Council. So, wow, that's a lot. Now, from that position there, that was in Sacramento?
Yes.
All right, so then you worked for the state government.
Yes. As a consultant.
As a consultant. And then that somewhere transitioned. I only knew you did stuff in Los Angeles. So look at all these different things that you did.
Well, actually, before I decided to accept an offer from Santa Clara County, which is San Jose. But it moves from Palo Alto to Gilroy in California. It is the fourth largest county.
That's like the lower Bay Area?
Yes.
Kind of Silicon
Correct.
Valley
yes,
area?
Yes, exactly as Silicon Valley.
And what years was this?
2002 to 2009.
Okay, all right. So, well, that's pretty recent.
Yes. And there, I did the same thing. I reorganized the agency with the help of the unions and with all of the different cultural groups that existed in Santa Clara County. And I was able to close a shelter where kids were languishing and not placed at home or with whoever. And I worked very closely with the chiefs of the different jurisdictions, Mountain View, Los Gatos, Palo Alto. And we created a system where actually children were being served by social workers, not the police. And that the police, we felt, was a real... To have a policeman transfer a child, even just to a hospital, et cetera, was very traumatic for a child, you know?
Yeah.
And so we really worked on that. So I think one of the things I'm very proud of is that although the national standard for social workers and child abuse agencies is about 60 families, and that could be a family of four, that could be a family of 12, but it's about 60 families. I'm very happy that I was able to release the children and to have assigned to each worker only 10 children. If a family had 10 children, that was it, only one family. And I think that actually was very groundbreaking in the field of child welfare services.
So, what was the main reason most of these kids was displaced? Was it parents that were adjudicated? Was it poverty? Was it drug abuse? What was, or was it new immigration where people just are in difficult circumstances? Can you elaborate what you saw as a primary social challenge in these areas?
I think the primary social challenge was parents who were using drugs or were alcoholics.
Which drugs? Is it hard drugs?
It depended. Now,
pharmaceutical?
Yeah, most of them were using meth.
Okay.
And that really was concerning because using that kind of drug, we believe, based on studies, is that the brain has actually changed. And the question was, even with all of that change in the parents, would they still be able to protect their child and nurture that child? So as director for the Department of Family and Children Services, I spent a lot of time working on protection for children and services for the families in drug and substance abuse.
Okay, so I want to ask a few questions, and in a little bit we'll open up the phone line, and people can call in, but I want to ask a few more questions, and then we'll be bringing in callers. I'm going to come back to some of these details on what your experience was, but a few questions I have. At some point you were in L.A. also. I'm wondering, what is the largest budget maybe that you managed, or how much staffing that you worked with?
Starting with Santa Clara County, my lowest budget that I had to work with was about $275 million. When I went to Los Angeles County, I was assistant director, first for child welfare there, and then moving over to public welfare. public welfare, the budget that I personally was managing was $4
billion. $4 billion. Okay, that's of interest to me because I believe our budget this year for the county is $190 million. So what I am hearing from you is you have experience with large budgets. How much staff did you have?
I had 14,000.
14,000. So you're
in my last job. Yes.
So you have had experience with budgets larger than the county by a magnitude of scale. Same with the amount of staffing. And so there's a lot of challenges that are inherent that would be similar and transferable. Of course, that's mostly in welfare, child welfare, human services. We have a call. We're going to take that call, and then I have a couple other questions. You're on the air, caller.
Hi, this is Ed Justice from Hanapepe.
Hi, Ed. Can you speak up loudly into your phone?
Sure. Is this better?
It is.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. The reason I'm calling is to bring awareness to the community of a bill that is going up for vote on the council. That's going to be tomorrow at 8 a.m., and that's Council Bill 2628, and it's a bill that affects pretty much everybody who has a county road in front of them. Are you aware of that bill?
I am. That is where people could put lunch wagons or small business kiosks along the road. Do I have that correct?
Basically, the bill as it reads is supposed to be for, the bill reads as revocable permits in county right-of-way. And how the bill has been presented is that it would give organizations the ability to regulate vendors that set up on county right-of-way, which would mean streets, parking stalls, and some sidewalks, during things like, say, Kapa'a's first Saturday or Hanapepe's Friday nights. However, that's not really what the language of the bill says. What the bill actually, the language of the bill, what it would actually do is it allows any applicant to get permission from the county with no community approval process, the ability to set up whatever vendors it would want on the county property in front of any business or property that it would want, and that business or property owner wouldn't have any say in what's being put in front of their establishment or their property, and they wouldn't have any right to prevent it from happening.
So an example would be your restaurant and maybe a pizza wagon or taco wagon opens up in front of your front door.
Right, exactly. And they would basically say, well, I have a permit that's been approved by the county, and because the way the law reads, they absolutely have the right to set up in front of you, and there's no there's no safeguards built into the language that would actually protect any business or property owner, because it doesn't just apply to commercial county roads. You know, it actually applies to even neighborhoods or anywhere that there's a county road. So somebody could even set up shop, say, in front of your house if it has a county road in front of it, and you wouldn't have any ability to say, I don't want this in front of me.
Although there must be stipulations of where there would be limitations on that. Like, I doubt the county would put a taco wagon in front of my house.
No. I mean, the way the language is written is that the rules and regulations are subject to the determination of the county. But there's nothing in the bill in hard language that actually provides safeguards of safety for the community, the residents, or even businesses. It's strictly a permit agreement between the applicant and the county directly. You know, the wording is very loose.
So there would not be a public hearing?
No. Excuse me. I shouldn't say that. It does have to go to public bid. Because according to the way the language reads, give me a moment, I got the bill in front of me.
Okay, and
there's section 20.52, which deals with exceptions to the bidding requirement. And the way subsection A reads, it says that the intended use, so it says that permits can be approved by approve without calling for public bid when, A, the intended use does not conflict with use for immediate public purposes. So, you know, of course, any county right-of-way would be for public public purposes. So anybody applying for that permit, it would have to go to public bid. And then the applicants, you know, somebody would bid on that spot. But according to the way the bill reads, there's no public hearing process. There's no community input process unless, you know, you're attending the, being involved in the bid, I'm assuming.
So it sounds like this isn't something that you're excited about. Will you be at the meeting tomorrow?
I am planning to be at the meeting.
So I have Norma Dr. Sparks, candidate for county council, in here. Were you calling also perhaps to ask what her perspective would be on such a bill as that?
Well, I wasn't aware she was on. Yeah. I was suggested to call, and I'd certainly give her much congratulations on running, having run myself, and it's definitely a lot of hard work. So hats off to you on that.
Thank you.
I guess my question for you, that would be an interesting one, is if you were on the council, one of the issues is that basically the reason this bill is being discussed is because the county is not, there's already existing county laws regarding peddling and vending on county property. The issue is that these laws aren't being enforced. And if that was the, you know, if they say, oh, we don't have the manpower for it, or we don't have the staff for it, I would like to hear your perspective as a council member, how you could see to help that situation.
This is one other good example of why I'm running. I am running because I want to see more transparency and more accountability in the county. A few weeks ago, I also ran, and I happened to have been on the council, at the council meeting, and they then were proposing to make the Waikomo Road in Kalua from the bank to the Kalua school a one-way street, all the way to the school. It also talked about striping part of the road so that children would be able to walk there back and forth.
Is this in the safe routes to school?
It's a safe route to school. However, the cars would have to go in and out of that area where children should be walking. And then the idea of having a road a one-way would really create a lot of disruption and congestion at one of the major intersections in Kalua, Kalua Road and Poipu Road. No one has really known about this, even though the department reported that they had been working for 7 years on this solution. And I was very shocked. And I went to Kalua School. I asked the principal if she knew anything about this. My husband, actually, who had been asked to teach fifth grade there, did not know anything about it. And so I made a protest, and I said, well, you know, talking to just 22 people along that route is insufficient. What about the rest of us who are living above this particular area but who use that? And what about the safety of us when, in fact, we might have a fire or a medical emergency? These vehicles would have to go all the way around to get to our house instead of going straight up on that side road. And so, you know, this issue that you're bringing up right now is a very good issue, and I would really ask to have more information about why they think they want to do this. Again, as you said, enforcement has not been done, and just adding more bills to the county's code is not the way to do business. And if I were on the county council, I would actually be asking these questions. And I would actually, like you, want to see where the enforcement would be, what the results of any kind of fines or any kind of applied penalty issued against certain businesses. I would also, if I were in the council, even though I am an attorney, I would ask county attorney to look at the bill and ensure that it makes sense legally, to ensure that it did not conflict with another kind of law, perhaps with the state law. And really try to have a bill that makes sense, that everyone understands what it's about. Everyone has an ability to provide input into that bill. And thirdly, to ensure that if we are going to have such a bill, that we can enforce it.
And what about the theme of, I think what I'm hearing Ed speak to is that this is saying, hey, you know, but probably, Ed, I'm sure there must be some sort of stipulations or these things would come up. If, like, is there certain defined areas where this can happen, where it's, you know, open? I mean, you can't just put it anywhere.
Yeah, I was really surprised by the looseness of the language, too, because as it's being changed, it just says that that the county can issue a revocable permit by the county engineer authorizing the applicant to vend in the right-of-way. And then it goes on to specify that for the purposes of this section, right-of-way means the entire width up from property line to property line, including the berm, swale, shoulder of a roadway owned and or under the jurisdiction of the County of Kauai.
Well, that's pretty broad. So, and then I'm going to want to be getting back to my main point where I'm interviewing her on different topics, but I would say that you are bringing up something that's so important, and I'm just going to say what I notice that I'm a little frustrated with the system that we have right now is the county is required to give 6 days' notice of what's on the agendas. And what that asks is that people are absolutely vigilant and know how to go into the county website and look. Like today, one of the issues was boating in Hanalei Bay. And so unless there are town criers who are saying, hey, I want this or I don't want this or whatever issue might be, that's one good thing about KKCR. I'll give a plug. Your issue is coming up on the radio. Maybe if people weren't listening, they would have no idea this is there. An issue that matters to businesses that might have competitors or a community might become feeling cluttered and congested and that there isn't the right of way and easements for people to go through. So there's many, many issues. And if people don't show up to speak about it or they don't know, and so we need to kind of really figure out a stronger outreach to the public because these are very important issues. And Ed Justice, you are on the Charter Review Commission, and you've watched me just have little meltdowns over not having these very, very important issues that are coming up on the Charter Review Commission. You have to really know hard how to find out what's coming up and to have any kind of time whatsoever to respond, because when they say you have to write a letter, like physically write a letter a week ahead of time and it doesn't even get on to the website, this is true for so many of these commissions, mm-hmm. You don't know what's coming up. And so you have to almost have a full-time job of policing what is going on at the county. So I would say that's something that really needs to change, and I appreciate you.
Yeah, I completely sympathize because, quite frankly, this bill came to my attention from another business owner in Hanapepe, who came to me and said, are you aware that this is happening? And I hadn't heard anything about it. And then most people that I've talked to about it haven't heard anything about it. They weren't even aware it was happening.
That's right. And then we have a very, very fresh staff for the Garden Island newspaper, very often constant turnover. And so people come, and they're wonderful people, but by the time they actually understand what's going on, they're off the island again or they're off the paper. And so if they are sitting in there listening, they don't know the trigger points. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. County Council candidate Norma Dr. Sparks is in here. Do you have a final thought, Ed?
That I really hope that everyone since this affects everyone, that people either write in to their council members for testimony or show up to the meeting themselves and you as a candidate, too, certainly would hope that you could be there to give your 2 cents, because I think it might have a lot of good weight.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing this up, and I definitely will be there.
Good. I look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing you, too, and perhaps we can talk about what next steps might be.
And absolutely. Businesses who might feel concerned about this or maybe hopeful about it because they wanted to be doing this, If you go to Kauai.gov and you go under government and you go to county council, you can click on it and you can see the agenda. And when you see the agenda item down there, it will give you a number. It's in blue. Click on that and you can actually look at the key document. So thank you, Ed.
No, thank you for taking my call.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Okay, well, that's good. That's an example of one of the types of things that you'd be dealing with. So we've covered that you're a smart girl, smart woman, done a lot of things, care very much about kids. It sounds like your Kuleana, your responsibility in your lifetime has been dealing with social issues, very big for Kauai. I'm assuming you're probably not as strong at building road beds.
Exactly, but I do know when roads need to get fixed.
Yeah, yeah. So this is my thing. Well, I feel like we got to be careful that we're not just, voting for one football team that can beat up the other side of the island. What we want is a good hand of cards. Everybody's got something different that they can bring to the table, so that when they come together for the council, it can be synergistic and everybody can strengthen it. So when I'm listening to you, born and raised here, probably a special understanding of the Filipino culture, because that's where you come from. You understand the immigrant experience. You are used to working with budgets, 100 times the size of what is Kauai. You have had exposure to what goes on in the state. Different states within the United States. You have done a number of different cities, so it sounds like you are able to read the law. You've got your doctorate in law. That's what a Juris Doctorate means, so those are good things. You probably can figure out how to read about putting in a highway or road thing, right? She's nodding. People forget they're on the radio.
I'm sorry. Yes. Yes.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to ask you a few hard questions. Maybe callers might call in at 826-7771. When people hear, we have a profound amount of homeless. We have a profound amount of, I would say, here's my opinion, too much adjudication going on, or too many, whether it's, I feel like it's, poverty, a cycle of poverty often brings people into jail. But I'm glad that you're considering running when you have this background on social challenges. What would you do here that you think might be able to put a dent into what we've got going on?
I think that I would bring my experience and knowledge about the budget so that we can set better priorities and really hold the county accountable for how we spend dollars.
But I mean, for the kids, how would you get the kids and the families? We get so much homeless.
Well, yeah, I agree. And in fact, I've often said that for these children, for example, that may come from homeless families, I believe that if we gave every child who had been brought to the system $6,000 a month for those families, we would actually not be needing any social workers, because a lot of these issues are coming out because of their poverty,
right,
and their inability to really figure out how to, move from the car to an apartment to a house, for example, and what kind of social services are needed to help them to move in that direction. I think with my experience, knowing about a lot of the dynamics of families and children, that even though a specific child might be brought to the attention of the county, for example, that child is only one part of the whole family. And I believe that all services should be given to all families. As county council, I would also look at the dollars that we are giving to nonprofits right now. And I would want to ensure that we are using these dollars, millions of dollars that are available right now to nonprofits, in a way that we can have a continuum of care so that we can provide the appropriate service to the person instead of perhaps duplicating services and leaving gaps, for example. I think those are the things that I would bring.
Okay, so thank you, Kauai County Council candidate Norma Dr. Sparks. And another question. when you are speaking about, I just lost my thought for a second there. Okay, I'm going to jump to agriculture for a moment. I'm going to jump to agriculture, then I'm going to come back to what I had come to my mind. Agriculture, we have a number of issues that are challenging us here. And I know this is a very big deal, and this is kind of a threshold question for people. People, when we're talking about behavior problems, sometimes people feel that there is too much that is contaminating the environment. So there's a lot of concerns about the high use of pesticides, high use even of Roundup and things like that in the playgrounds. And we also have another big issue. The Hawaii Dairy Farms put out their draft EIS 6 inches thick and still yet left out some of the most major concerns that are in there. They just acted like it didn't even belong there. So we have a water contamination issue already in Kalaua Poipu. So there's the extra threat of that. How would you handle these issues, or what is your opinion on high-impact agriculture?
I come from a family of farmers, for generations of farmers. Even though my parents, for example, had a retail store, or, you know, they also had an import-export business, and probably the first nursing home in the state of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Even though my parents had all of that, my father still wanted to be a farmer. So he got some property behind Sleeping Giant and began to grow papayas. So I really respect and I really support agriculture. But I do think that the different types of agriculture should be considered for the specific site. For example, having been born and raised in Kalaua, for example, Mahalolepu has been a place where, you know, as kids we played in Poipu Beach, you know, we went almost every day swimming. And my concern about the appropriate placement of a particular agriculture industry, for example, cows, 3 miles from our home, 1 mile from the Hyatt. My concern is that we want to support agriculture as much as possible. However, we also need to have a balance between what type of agriculture we have and the potential of damaging the environment that we live in. And, you know, lifeguards have told me that they believe the currents run from Mahalolepu to Poipu. So if anything happened in that area, the current would take it to Poipu. And that is a very frightening thought to me. And so the potential of those damaging effects, I believe, need to be weighed against what kind of jobs we have, what kind of economy we have. So there might be 13 jobs being created for this industrial dairy. However, there's, you know, 1,000 other employees in the hotels, the Hyatt, the Sheraton, et cetera.
The visitor industry.
Exactly. That would be out of a job if, in fact, the worst scenario, which is polluting all of that area with, you know, the cows, feces, et cetera. And so I really also want to protect this very delicate environment we have. My husband and I, for example, finished the feasibility study for an adolescent treatment facility for the county of Kauai.
For drugs?
For drugs. And we looked at environment. And we believe that there is a need for these children to have an environment that will feed their soul. And I think that's the same thing for everybody. We all want to have a place that is, you know, that will nurture us. I grew up at a time where, you know, everything was very pristine. And I want to try to get back to that. So anything that might hurt that is very concerning to me.
Do you have, I'm just going to ask it bluntly, a competing job? I know that we have, in my opinion, the county council job is a full-time job, and it is sort of an act of volunteerism at some level when the people who really do a robust job with that You know, it's a full-time plus job. It's paid and benefited as a half-time job. Do you have another job?
My husband and I have a consulting firm.
What do you consult on?
The most recent that I consulted on was to look at the needs for the state of Hawaii for an automated system in the Department of Social Services or with the Attorney General's office.
The computer stuff.
The computer stuff. I have also been identified as an expert in child welfare, and I actually have had contracts with the Department of Attorney General. And I served as their expert witness. But I also served as an expert just reviewing, you know, thousands of pages of a case, for example, to give some ideas about the strategy for a case. So those are, but all of these things we've done, we have done as an addition to our real work, which is being retired.
Mm-hmm.
I've been retired, and I've been very lucky in that I have pensions from the state of Hawaii and from County of Los Angeles and the County of Santa Clara County. So I do not have an employer that might place me in a place of conflict that I might have to recuse myself.
That's kind of what I'm looking at. You know, I thought that you were pretty free from that, but it's really important, I think, that people are able to not have a conflict of interest in that.
I agree. You know, As I said earlier, my parents have really instilled this, you know, and the need for community service. And it's something that I've always wanted to do. But frankly, we have two sons, and they had to go through college, et cetera.
And where do they live?
They both went to Cornell University.
Mm-hmm.
Our older son.
It's in New York.
He's in.
Cornell is in New York.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Cornell is in New York. One child hated the cold so much that he said he'd never go to the East Coast again. So he's now in California. He is a medical director for United Healthcare. And the second son, who is actually has a master's from University of Pennsylvania as well, in landscape architecture, really went back to his real interests, and he was hired by MAC Cosmetics to be the senior global designer.
Mm.
So he's done a lot of fun things, and he lives, of course, in New York City where the corporation is.
I see.
So once they went through school, I mean, they actually went to Punahou from kindergarten to 12th grade. And my husband was a teacher and I was a social worker. And we really struggled to give our children the education that we thought, you know, would benefit them. But once they left and were then now settled, I now am free to do this deeper community service, and I'm really looking forward to doing it.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia on Kauai Soapbox, and we have Norma Dr. Sparks, candidate for Kauai County Council, on in the room. At the top of the hour at 6 o'clock, Jazz with John will be up and on. He does always a great job with his music. Norma, I've been kind of like torturing you a little bit. I think you need to campaign harder. What's up with that? I'm not seeing enough of you out there. It seems like you have a whole lot to offer. Is there a website that people could go and find more information, or a phone number? How do people get a hold of them? She's pointing at her husband, Steve. Steve?
The website's under construction.
Ah, okay.
And her phone number is 808-351-0306.
And do you have a Facebook page?
We're also working on that right now. And we hope it'll be finished by this week.
Okay, we got to get you going on that. And then, you're about to say something?
Yeah, and we've also had a lot of support from families and friends. We've stood out and signed, you know, wave signs. I believe I also had a really encouraging fundraiser at the Veterans Center a couple of months ago or so. And that was very encouraging to me.
If I didn't already know who you were, and the reason I know who you were is because I ran for county council. And I want to say I thought you did an extraordinary job on the forum. I loved how you managed that and you asked the questions. You were with the Filipino Chamber of Commerce, is that correct?
Correct.
And are you still on the board?
I'm vice president.
You're vice president of the Filipino Chamber of Commerce. And I think you need to get out there a little bit more. That's why I'm trying to help you with this show. And by the way, anybody running, I have put it out there to all the people running. I know a couple of them are listening in right now. Matt Bernardi says hi and that he thinks he'd be a great compliment to you. They are listening. And anybody is welcome to come in here. You can call KKCR at 826-7774 or somebody like myself. I'm at 652-4363. Our community affairs team, we really work hard to help people know more about the candidates that are out there. Do you have any events coming up? Where can people come and meet you?
We are having sign waving this Thursday
out
right across from the Hilton Garden Inn.
I don't know where that is.
Wailua. Right. Well, depending if you're going.
They change their names all the time.
So yeah, yeah.
I
can't remember. It was the one under renovation right by the bridge in Wailua. So we'll be standing right across there.
Okay.
From 4 to 6 p.m.
Okay.
Also, email address, normadrsparks@gmail.com.
And doctor isn't me. You happen to be a doctor, but it's doctor, right?
Correct.
That's your maiden name.
Yes, and it is spelled like a physician, and I carry it in honor of my parents.
And then it's Steve Sparks right here, yes?
Yes.
And so, hey, better half. What you're a teacher, she said. Is that's your larger focus in life, or what has been? She's not shaking her head. No. Just give us a couple sentences on who you are, other than very friendly and clearly bright and warm.
I was a teacher for 16 years, taught music at the secondary school level, and then went into finance. Worked with Bank of Hawaii's trust division in the investment department. And also worked for Santa Clara County in the finance department of the county government for about 7 years or so. And then when we came back to Kauai, I decided to do some substitute teaching and ended up teaching fifth grade last year at Koloa Elementary School.
Oh, great. Great. And when did you guys come back to Kauai?
We came back at the end or beginning, about 2012.
2012. Uh-huh. So you've been back for 4 years, so you're swimming in the current here. I know you did the study you said, like, on the youth adolescent treatment facility. Marshall, do you have any questions?
Well,
hold on.
So if we just had the review of the cases regarding the GMO companies on Oahu. Are you following that situation?
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals?
Yes, a little bit, yes.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that we're going to be disappointed. I think that Ninth Circuit will probably find that the county would have to, will not be able to create any bill or anything about managing, pesticides, et cetera.
But the county will not have the right to regulate its own environment.
That's
to protect
the feeling, that's the sense I'm getting just from the information I have been receiving from friends of Mahalapu as well as Malama Mahalapu, and looking at as well, newspaper accounts, et cetera, about it. But I do think that the state will prevail. And that the counties will not. I think, though, that it is something that should be somehow brought up to the Hawaii Supreme Court.
Okay, well, let's look at this. Yes, it should go to the Supreme Court. And then I want to know your thoughts on this. Having gone over to the state legislature, and I'll tell you, it's expensive to go testify. It's a problem. It's, it's a commitment of, you know, $400 or $500 sometimes. If you're lucky, it's under three. But you don't know when something's on the agenda until the night before. It's premium cost to get over there. Sometimes you have to spend the night because there's no morning flights. It's kind of a twofold question. You know, how would you work to help to get us to have, you know, I think we should have video conferencing. I feel like no doubt that they don't allow that because then they would have an avalanche of people wanting to speak. And so it becomes a gatekeeper. If they say, okay, if you want to testify so bad, you have to fly over here. So it really holds a lot of people back. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, how do you feel like you would be able to work with the state? Because on that issue, Marjorie Bronster, you know, she was arguing, hey, it's up to the state. I'm thinking, no, it's up to Clift Tsuji. It's up to one single individual that it doesn't matter. Whatever else comes up when he's in that position of the agriculture chair, mm-hmm. you got to have everybody vote, hey, we want to basically protect the islands in the way that they're asking to be protected. And he says, oh, yeah, no.
Exactly.
And he takes it off the agenda. And so it's very discouraging. How would you help Kauai? Do you have relationships with these people? How would you work to do that? Because right now we have Mel Raposo is the Hawaii State Association of Counties. He goes over and helps with some of these things. How would you be able to bridge that?
Well, I have some relationships with some of the legislators already. I think also that because of my experience with the legislature for, you know, 10, 20 years, I think there are people that know me.
Mm-hmm.
And that one of the things that I would do is to use those relationships and really try to advocate better about what we really want. And I think, you know, you're right that it comes down to one person.
And would you go over with the people? Like, that's
definitely.
I mean, that's one thing I have to, you know, throw a big hand out to Gary Hooser. And when Tim Bynum was on there, he'd be on the plane with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important, not just on that one particular issue. There are so many issues that are really critical. And, like, when I did go over to the Ninth Circuit Court, it was amazing who was not there. You know, Scott Enright wasn't there. You know, really key people weren't there. And it's important to see that your representative is actually going to represent you.
And yes, I agree. And I think that I would work closer with the county's representatives and the Senate. I think, too, that, you know, one of the people that really helped me is actually planning to retire, and that's Suzanne, and that's Susie Chun Oakland. She's planning mm-hmm. on retiring, and that's going to be a huge hole in trying to get social services.
Because she's the chair.
She's a chair, and she's been there for so many years. So I know that, but I also know the people that will probably take her place.
Yeah,
and so using those relationships I've had, and with my, I believe my reputation in getting things done in a civil way, in a thorough way, in a way that, you know, people can gather together and agree on it. I think that's what I would do if I were with the county. I would take more of, I guess, steps to really make those connections. You know, I learned early on to walk the floors of, you know, the chambers, et cetera, because that's the way the jobs are done, and that's what I would do as well.
Thank you. So in just a moment, we are going to have the county council report. Every Tuesday we play that so people know what's coming up tomorrow, and then Jazz with John will be on, and you really both get an opportunity for a final aloha. You have 15 seconds. So do you. So do you.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm hoping that people will hear about me and will try to get, you know, think that I might be the best solution right now. I think the county needs experience. The county needs a strong leader. And the county needs someone who will be able to make any changes in a civil way in a cooperative way with the other council members. And if elected, those are the things that I would want to do. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Norma Dr. Sparks, council candidate for Kauai County Council. Steve, you just got a quick aloha because we're almost out of time.
Aloha. Thank you for listening. Like to ask for your support for Norma Dr. Sparks. She's a longtime resident, born and raised in Kauai. Her parents are Sakatas. They came in 1946 and also had an interest in helping and supporting the community. And so I know that if you vote for Norma Dr. Sparks, she will do a great job. She's very dedicated and committed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both for coming in. Felicia, pleasure to be here. Thank you. Aloha, everyone.
Aloha. Kauai Soapbox, Jazz with John is up next right after the County Council Report.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a County Council Report for the week of June 27th. There will be a council committee meeting on Wednesday, June 29th at 8:30 a.m., and the meeting will be in the council chambers in Lihue. Here are highlights from the agenda. The Public Works, Parks, and Recreation Committee has a request from Committee Chair Kagawa for the acting county engineer to address landscape maintenance concerns around county facilities. Also on their agenda is Bill 2628 for an ordinance to amend the county code relating to revocable permits and county-designated right-of-ways. The Public Safety Committee has on their agenda Bill 2629 for an ordinance to amend the county code relating to smoking in a motor vehicle. Public hearing was held on this on June 15th. The Budget and Finance Committee has on their agenda Bill 2633 for an ordinance amending the county code relating to the beneficial tax rate for property used for long-term affordable rental. Public hearing was also held on this on June 15th. The Committee of the Whole has a request from Council Chair Raposo for the acting county engineer to provide a briefing on the notice of violation and order from the State of Hawaii Department of Health Clean Water Branch for National Pollutant Discharge Elimination Systems, permit-related violations and penalties at 4 refuse transfer stations. This item is also in a non-public executive session where the Office of the County Attorney will brief the Committee of the Whole on this issue. For more information, please visit the county's website. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.